Yankees Files podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of a team that has the best record in the American League and is tied for the best record in Major League Baseball. Those are, of course, the New York Yankees, who at the time we are recording this are up 6-0 on the possibly hapless Miami Marlins, who are, of course, coming off a playoff appearance. We'll get into all kinds of things about the early season thus far and how it's gone. But first, Whipple, how are you?
I'm doing well. Anything that happened last week, I feel like was just great. Like, or everything that happened last week was just great. Like, there's no negatives about anything that we saw on the field. Even the middle of the week, you know, down stretch of play, that was really just two losses in three games and some offensive ineptitude. I think any worries we had were pretty quickly cured by three straight, at least six run games, and maybe more by the time this gets released. And everything's just firing on all cylinders. I think, you know, it's not like the Yankees run differential is indicative of a team that's probably going to be 9-2. It's slightly worse than that. But I feel like the way they've played the last few games, the way they've won a bunch of close games to come out of the season, and then the way that they've done it against really good teams, all teams that made the playoffs last year, even though the Marlins look a bit worse this year. I mean, Jesus Luzardo is a good pitcher. Like, I feel like on every single account, this team has impressed. And I think the most impressive thing is just the poise that they've shown. It's not even like they, you know, they've responded to challenges. I feel like they've responded to challenges in such a way that like makes you forget that there was even a challenge. And that's, yeah, we've seen, you know, the Yankees Fells era, we've seen teams get off to good starts. So I'm not going to put the cart before the horse, but
we've seen a team get off to a good start. I think
we've seen good stretches by teams.
Sure. We have.
I think our 2022 experience is, not going to let us put the cart before the horse, but if this team wanted to make a statement after last year, after we said last week, they've only continued doing so. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely impressive that this team is, you know, up 7-0 in the bottom of the fifth with a chance to go to 9-2 on the year. I think there's so much to like, whether it's Anthony Volpe on pace for like a 16 war season, whether it's just, I don't know even what there is to say about Juan Soto that hasn't been said, but how well he's played, whether it's Marcus Stroman's zero earned runs allowed in 12 innings, and arguably, more importantly, when you talk about stuff that might be sustainable, the fact that Marcus Stroman has not had the walk issues that he sometimes had in the past. Look, are there red flags to me? Do I agree with your assertion that you can't complain about anything that's happened to this point? Yeah, there are red flags, so no, I don't agree with that. And there are certainly some things that are unfortunate, like losing Jonathan Loaisiga for the season, and perhaps that being the end of his Yankees career. You know, that's both disappointing, you know, as a fan of a player and wanting him to succeed and be healthy, but also disappointing, you know, thinking about the construction of this team and what he was going to mean to them. But man, I really feel like there's a lot to like here. I mean, with these five innings, Nestor has already gotten his ERA down below 4.5. Like, the short season, small sample stuff can be misleading, of course. You know, Anthony Volpe, I think, has a 520 BABIP right now. But it can also be a ton of fun. And I like the way stuff is moving. You know, after last week, my major concern was, hey, like, you know, do the Yankees realize that it's important to hit the ball hard and hit it in the air and hit it over the fence? And it frankly like wasn't obvious that they did realize that. And it seemed like they were just kind of BABIP merchants. But since then, you know, they have really started to hit the ball over the fence, which I love. They have a couple 3-run home runs tonight. And it's not like a contact at all costs approach as much as it appeared to me to be one earlier on. So I love a lot of what I'm seeing. As I said, there are some things I want to pick at, some questions I want to ask, but I'm not going to complain about a team that is within arm's reach of being 9-2 through its first 11 games, especially given the quality of competition that they faced at least before this series with Miami.
Yeah, I feel like they designed their last three games to specifically answer the questions that you were asking. Like the offensive performance from Tuesday to Friday, whatever that like three game stretches where they barely scored. I mean, that was definitely concerning, but I think the, you know, the at bats that are being taken have been good all year. And I guess the approach at the plate, you know, is one thing, but it didn't seem like they were hitting the ball hard. But with the at bats being good, we know that these guys have the ability to hit the ball hard. I mean, it's like you always say, you know, you're not going to just suddenly expect Gleyber Torres, Anthony Rizzo, Aaron Judge to, you know, completely lose their ability to play baseball. And what I'm most encouraged by is the guys who maybe there are more legitimate questions for, like a Giancarlo Stanton, have also responded in perhaps bigger fashion. Or look at someone like a Nestor Cortez tonight. I mean, definitely of the starters, of the more established starters, I think there are serious questions with, you know, how his first two starts were going. And to do what he did tonight, I mean, it just feels like the questions that we're not even asking have been answered, or the ones that we're not even concerned about as much. And for the issues that I think still exist, Alex Verdugo probably being a big one in your mind, I feel like the solutions are there. And maybe that's why, like, the concern is lower when you know that, like, it's not the 2023 Yankees where it's like, okay, we don't have a left fielder. We don't really have a third baseman who, you know, we don't have these pieces that we need. Right now, I'd say the biggest pieces that we don't have that we need, if you're the Yankees, are coming in the bullpen. And again, like, I feel like we can trust the Yankees pretty implicitly with their bullpen management. So I know there's a divide between us on which we are more inherently confident with. And I saw your tweet where you said that you're glad that the pitching got off to a good start before the offense had picked up, because you always will kind of know the offense will come around. And I just feel like I'm the opposite, where like the offensive performance is so, like, I just trust the pitching, and I feel like the offensive performance being so up and down these last few years always has me concerned. But now I feel like the tools are there, the pieces are there, the Trent Grishams are waiting in the wings, and whatever happens, like, I think there will come a point when, if Alex Verdugo keeps hitting like this, a move can be made. But knowing that there's a Trent Grisham there, or knowing that you have Oswaldo Cabrera and John Birdie ready to step up and play third base and do it well in the absence of other guys. Like, I feel like the supporting depth is just so much in a better position. Maybe it's the evolution of what we had said last year about the minor league development kind of really just taking its time to unfold. And now we're kind of in the era of the 2020-2021 player development overhaul really bearing fruits. Maybe they're just picking up better bench pieces. Whatever the case is, I just feel like with my worries about the offense, the pieces are there to make me feel not as worried. And whatever happens in the bullpen, like, I just know Matt Blake, like you said, it's going to find a guy. If maybe he's not even on the team, to go along with the guys like the Nick Birdies and the Dennis Santanas who are starting to make their names.
What do you think Trent Grisham needs to do to get the Yankees to put him on the baseball field?
Well, I feel like, and, you know, you could push back, but there's definitely less of a Aaron Judge, Anthony Rizzo, Giancarlo Stanton are sitting, you know, every sixth game. I'm not saying that is how it should be, but you have to admit that's how it is for whatever reason. Maybe it's Juan Soto's influence. Maybe Aaron Boone's writing the lineups.
Wait. What is this Juan Soto's influence crap? I saw a tweet that said Gleyber never would have played the game after he got hit in the hand if Juan Soto weren't on the team.
I'm not talking about Gleyber. No, I'm talking about Judge, Stanton, Rizzo. Those are the three guys that I am surprised have not been sitting more regularly, or at least Judge at all.
You think that they're playing a lot of games because Juan Soto is on the team?
No, I'm saying there's, for whatever reason, there's a definite change in the way the lineup is being written.
I don't know. Aaron Judge played pretty much every day. I mean, what do you play? 159 games in 2022? Like, this is what I've been saying on Twitter. When Aaron Boone, and first of all, Giancarlo has sat regularly. When Aaron Boone has young, healthy, good players, he plays them. And I think we are both almost certain that if DJ LeMahieu were healthy, Anthony Rizzo would have had a day off by now. I'm almost sure he's been pressed into action. And to be clear, like outside of his IL stints, Anthony Rizzo does basically play, you know, a ton. In 2021, he played 141 games, but didn't he have something at the end of the year? 2022, he played 130, but he had an IL stint. Like, that's a guy who plays a lot. And yes, he's appeared in every, or he's played, started every game this year, but like that Anthony Volpe and Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and Gleyber Torres are playing every game is not surprising to me. And this is not at all out of step with how Boone has treated healthy players in the past.
Okay, so then I point to, I guess my point then is Trent Grisham is then not viewed at the level that we think he should be viewed at, because we know when the Yankees have had an extra guy that they want to rotate in, they will do that. And so I guess what I'm thinking of and you're kind of saying is that it's not a rotation situation. It's not an Alex Verdugo sits every fourth game. It's only when off days come and these guys are playing, so off days aren't coming. So that's
what do you think has to happen? Like,
I don't know. I think someone has to get hurt. I think someone has to get hurt
for Alex Verdugo, who's been awful to cede time to Trent Grisham? That sucks, man.
I think Alex Verdugo is the starter, even though I think we both kind of wanted it to be more of a platoon situation. And as long as that's the case, I feel like Trent Grisham's not going to get to play. Trent Grisham will get to play when they want Aaron Judge to be out of center field, which is apparent. And it doesn't seem like at any other moment right now he is considered for playing.
I'm thinking that part of this is that they really don't want to put Judge or Soto in left field.
You know what I would... Well, yes, also that. And I think that should probably happen more often than they want to. But now
I would say that more often than not, the outfield should be Soto, Judge, and Grisham.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least trying that combination. And I don't think Alex Verdugo is going to get benched, but I think it's kind of absurd that Trent Grisham...
Alex Verdugo should get benched.
But he's not going to get benched. So
I think you're right.
But remember
but it bothers me.
Remember when Gleyber Torres didn't start opening day because of that? Like there was like five infielders for four spots. I think it was 2022.
Do I remember that? I remember DJ LeMahieu starting either opening day of his first contract, which was funny.
But it was because he came off the bench and hit like that game tying sack
fly. Oh yeah, he hit the sack fly. That's right. Oh, because it was Rizzo, DJ,
IKF.
Donaldson, and IKF. Wow.
So cursed.
Yeah, that's crazy. And then Gleyber tied the game and Donaldson won it. What a weird... Ugh.
Why was that a rotation and this can't be a rotation?
Exactly. That's a phenomenal question. It doesn't make any sense to me. And this is, by the way, this is the unfortunate flip side of when Aaron Boone has young, healthy players... He doesn't take them out of the lineup. Alex Verdugo needs to be taken out of the lineup. Like Trent Grisham has never gotten into a game at Alex Verdugo's expense. It's all been, we take Stanton out and we DH one of the other outfielders. And that's how Grisham gets into the game. It's ridiculous.
How many times has he started? Two?
Two, I think. Yeah. Two.
I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. We'll see. But I don't like where it's going. I'm with you on that one. Like, I'm getting bad vibes because there are good vibes with Alex Verdugo, if that makes sense.
And the other bad... You're 100% correct. The other bad vibe that I'm getting, and I don't want to focus this all on bad vibes, and we will transition, but the other bad vibe I'm getting is around a certain Jose Trevino. Austin Wells is a good player who is destroying the baseball. Why is Jose Trevino starting today's game?
So today is what, the 11th game? And so this is Trevino's.
Today is the 11th game.
And it's his fifth start. So I feel like, I mean, I don't agree with it, but like, I feel like they gave him the ceremonial starts of opening day and home opener. And he started two day games after night games. So I'd like to see what happens in like the next 2 weeks when we're kind of on a more normal schedule and see what the split is, because I am a little less worried, because I feel like if Austin Wells, like in a regular kind of like everyday situation, I feel like Austin Wells is going to get to play more. But Jose Trevino, yeah, he's just like, he should play once a week at most. I mean, the bat is just not there. And like that bottom of the lineup gets pretty thin when he is in the eighth spot.
Yeah, I guess I hadn't considered that it was, this would have been the third day in a row and after Wells caught a day game after a night game, if he had started today. But
yeah, that's what I meant. But like, yeah, we'll see.
It hurts. Cause like even today, you know, things are going as well as they possibly could for the Yankees. They're up 7-0 in the sixth inning. But you look at the bottom of that lineup, and Verdugo's having the best day overall he's had as a Yankee with two hits and a walk. But then it's Jose Trevino and John Birdie. And like that's not scaring anyone. And I don't know where I stand exactly on Oswaldo Cabrera. Because obviously he's been having some tremendous ball and play luck. So I don't want to be like, why are you putting John Birdie in there? Ride the hot hand, because we know ball and play luck is fickle and it's not, you know, reliable. But Oswaldo Cabrera's name at least means more to me in that lineup than John Birdie's does. And on the catching front, Austin Wells is destroying the ball. And I understand that people are conservative about catcher usage, and that's fine with me. And it's nice to see that Wells will get the majority of the reps, but as you pointed out, should be even more of them. The bottom of the lineup just gets really thin. And I don't know, like, so DJ LeMahieu has been hitting on the field. He's been doing baseball stuff. Like, how does DJ LeMahieu fit back into this equation?
I mean, I guess you see where it is when he comes back, because there's a good chance Oswaldo Cabrera could be on like an 0-for-20. I mean, I don't feel like John Birdie is going anywhere. Is Jamai Jones still on the team? Because I forget.
They haven't made a position player move. So Jamai Jones, yes, is still on the team. So I guess he's the odd man out.
I guess, right. But like in terms of,
but yeah, you can't be optioned, and they love preserving options.
Yeah, like I feel like there's a 20% chance Oswaldo Cabrera goes down, but I feel like it's the easy move to make. The more interesting question to me, and one that I texted you about, is what does the lineup look like when DJ comes back? Do you think they put him right back in leadoff? Because I feel like that's not how I'd want to handle a guy coming back from injury. And I think the X factor here is, are you an Anthony Volpe should go to leadoff and just, you know, chips all in believer? My opinion is that I'd like to at least see it and see what it's like. Not like, you know, you have to commit to it full time forever, but I want Gleyber Torres cleanup. I don't want Santa Rizzo cleanup. I want Volpe, Soto, Judge, and Gleyber. If they're all hitting at their best, I feel like that's your best top four. And I don't feel like putting DJ LeMahieu in and then moving Gleyber down to like sixth is the answer.
So Volpe's had a good quality of contact day today, in the sense that he hit a home run. But year over year, and I guess that was his only contact today, so he's had a good quality of contact day. Year over year, his ex-WOBA coming into tonight was only up 11 points. So, and it translates to like a slightly above league average hitter. It's 316 coming into today. It went up. I don't know by how much, but it was 316 coming into today. I don't know that batting average on balls in play guy is what you like buy into when making someone your leadoff hitter. I think Volpe has made strides in being willing to walk and taking some pitches and stuff, but I don't think he works at bats in the way Glaber does, and I don't think he's the threat offensively that Glaber is. Like, Glaber hasn't heated up yet, and he got screwed twice by Angel Hernandez on Sunday, which was unfortunate. But, like, we're at the end of the day, we're talking about a guy who was like a 125 WRC plus bat, was it? Or 120 last year, whatever Glaber was, versus 84 for Volpe. And the question is, do 11 games that we've seen this year change how we feel about that situation? And to me, no. But then there's the question of, well, how are the Yankees going to handle it? And I really think the Yankees like when DJ LeMahieu is hitting leadoff. And right. I don't think the Yankees will hit Glaber ahead of Rizzo or Stanton, even though I would say they probably should. I would agree with you on that. So I think maybe, you know, I think probably the most likely is DJ, Soto, Judge, Rizzo and Stanton in whichever order, and then Glaber, Verdugo, Volpe, because I think they love throwing in a lefty to break up righties as if that's something important. So I'd be surprised if, like, when have they ever used DJ LeMahieu in a way that suggests that's not exactly what they would do?
I like when he batted fifth sometimes. I don't know. I thought that, like, I mean,
I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you about what we like in this situation. I'm just saying
they have used him there. We've seen it before.
We have.
I don't think that's how they envision him on this team, though. That was like,
yeah,
a Yankees lineup that was depleted. So yeah, my thing is, like, would I rather, you know, try to get Volpe in to stave off DJ LeMahieu, or am I risking Glaber staying just knowing he's the sacrificial lamb? Damn it.
Yeah, it's a tough situation.
But
Whipple, remember 2022 Aaron Judge?
He was pretty good.
He was pretty good. He played center field. He had like 11 war. He hit 62 home runs. Good player, right?
Yeah, not too bad.
The best season by a Yankee that you have ever seen, that I've ever seen?
It's that or 2007 A-Rod, and it's probably, nope, I don't think 2007 A-Rod beats him. Okay, then yeah. I trust you.
So you're familiar with Dad Take or Bad Take?
I've known, I've spoken to a couple of the fathers involved.
Well, over Easter weekend, I got to expand Dad Take or Bad Take by a generation. I got to speak to someone who remembers a player and a season better than 2022 Aaron Judge. And I got to interview my grandpa about, among other things, his memories of Mickey Mantle when he was growing up just outside the Bronx. So I'm going to throw it to that. I had a ton of fun with it. And, you know, getting to talk to someone who's been a fan of the Yankees for over 70 years and hear about the people and games and events that he remembers and that he experienced, that was pretty cool. And I'm really glad that we got to document it and record it, because, you know, there aren't too many people like that out there. So without any further ado, I'll throw it to that. I hope everyone enjoys. Hey, and we are back with the newest segment on the Yankees Files podcast. You know and love Dad Take or Bad Take. Now here's Granddad Take or Bad Take, featuring my grandfather, my namesake, another Robert Harris, who I call Babo. Babo, it's so great to do this. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm surprised to be here. I didn't anticipate this, so we'll get to see how it goes.
Yeah, I think it'll be great. You bring over 70 years of rooting for the Yankees to this podcast, which for the mathematically inclined is more than Whipple and I combined.
Right. I'd say it's actually a little more than 70 years.
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, one very fond memory I have about the Yankees is going to my first Yankee game. Right. And of course, I went with you and Hopo, my grandma and Allie, my sister. And, you know, that was just so cool. And unfortunately, they didn't win that day, but it really didn't matter. I mean, it was just what a great time and what a great thing that we got to do together. What I think is a great place for us to start here is, what is your first memory of the Yankees?
Let me just say, the memory you were talking about there, I can remember the look on your face when you walked from the corridors in Yankee and saw the field there and everything. I mean, that. For a grandparent was a terrific thing to see.
And what a special time. Yeah.
Well, I have to say I've always been a Yankee. It's hard to understand when that started. My recognition probably was more like 8 or 9. As a little boy, other things were going on. This is at a time when the middle class was just getting television. So the idea when I was 5 or 6 years of watching television, I don't think we got a television until I was maybe 6 years old. That's one piece. The other is I lived and grew up in a single family house in Yonkers. It was about, which is not part of New York City, about 1,500 feet from Van Cortlandt Park, which is part of the Bronx.
Sure.
And since I went primarily to Catholic schools, elementary, high school, college, all of my schooling was in the Bronx.
Oh, yeah.
Elementary school in the Woodlawn section of the Bronx. High school and college in Riverdale, which is a portion of the Bronx. So it was sort of always the Bronx, and it was always the Yankees. I remember having a boyhood friend, maybe I was 7 years old, and the thing for us to get was this, I don't know, like nylon, bright blue zipper jacket that had Yankees in script across the front of it, and it must have been, this must have been 5 inches high. And I had one of those.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So do you remember going to your first game?
Well, I remember going to my first game, but I don't remember a lot about it.
Sure.
Maybe I was 9 or 10. And the more memorable thing was I can remember going to an evening game when I was 12 or 13 with one of my high school classmates. Mm-hmm. I was pretty young in high school, and his father drove us to the Woodlawn Elevated train station.
Sure,
and you'd just take a short ride down to, I don't know what it was, 10 or 15 minutes down to Yankee Stadium. It was a night game, and we were in the center field bleachers.
Sure.
And Mickey Mantle hit a beautiful blast into the bleachers. I can remember looking at it in the papers the next day where they estimated. I don't remember how long it was, but it was a wonderful, magnificent shot.
So that is so cool. And I think, you know, for a long time in my enjoyment of baseball, your memory of Mickey Mantle has been kind of central to it. I mean, I remember being in first grade and you getting me a Yankee shirt that said Harris on the back and had the number 7 because of Mickey Mantle. And I remember you giving me a hardcover blue book called Baseball's Most Valuable Players around that same time. Mm-hmm. And it had, you know, it of course had Willie Mays and Duke Snyder and whoever else. But the reason I was reading that book was because it had Mickey Mantle in it. So I would love to hear just kind of your memories, not only just of seeing Mickey Mantle play, but on top of that, of what it was like to be, you know, a boy in New York at this time of this incredible baseball player. You know, do you remember going to school and talking about him? You know, what do you remember him winning the Triple Crown? What do you remember about getting to watch and experience Mickey Mantle?
Well, by the time I was in high school, I'd be watching baseball, I guess, on TV and not, if not on, on radio. And part of the routine in high school is you'd get to class early, and to get to class, I had to walk about five blocks and take two buses.
Oh, wow.
And you'd get there, and the whole buzz before class really started was talking about the Yankee game the night before. And yeah, a lot of it spun around Mantle, because this would be 55, 56, 57,
yeah,
which were really, I think, big years for
definitely
Mickey Mantle. But I know in games I went to, I was interested in other players too.
Sure.
Hank Bauer, Moose Gowron, that
sure,
I hear a lot about, Yogi Berra, Ford, Bob Turley.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of as a fastball pitcher. And it was almost the thing that dominated the before high school classes.
That is so cool. Because, you know, I remember it was maybe not nearly as much in the zeitgeist when I was in school, but I have a distinct memory of in the 2009 playoffs, the last time the Yankees won the World Series, Whipple and I would always find each other in the hallways before school and talk about the game and how well they were doing. So it's nice that that's transcended the generations in a way. Definitely.
Right. I'd say also the whole, you know, expose kind of stuff with Mickey Mantle, his drinking, his womanizing, and that, we knew nothing of that, and all the better.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, he was a hero to so many people, as were other players.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Yogi Berra, and I do want to get back into the, you know, the playing days in the 50s and 60s of so many of these great players and games you went to and things you experienced. But I think people would really enjoy the story of when we went to spring training in 2008 and a certain Hall of Famer that you ran into.
Yeah. Well, we went to several spring training games in Tampa. And one evening we were just started to eat dinner at a Roy Selman's on the far end of a parking lot. And I was a little cold, so I decided to walk back across the parking lot. It was certainly spring training time meant it was dark. And I start to walk into the hotel, and out of my periphery, I see somebody walking alongside me. And, you know, I said to myself, oh, there's some little old man, which is probably a good way to describe me right now. And I looked over and then did a double take, and I said, are you Yogi Berra? And he replied to the affirmative. And I asked him if I could get an autograph for my grandson. And so we went in and went up to the front desk. So now keep in mind, at this time, I was carrying, as was everybody with us, index cards and a pen,
yeah,
lest we get any Yankee. I had never expected, certainly Yogi Berra. He gave me, I think, two autographs.
Yeah, he signed both sides.
Right. And he was on the first floor, but we walked down past the elevator, and I related to him being a lifelong Yankee fan and the high point being Don Larsen with Yogi Berra, the catcher, the only perfect game in World Series history. I remember that time in high school, taking the two buses to bring and running down the street to be able to get the television on for the second half of the game and to see the in real time, the only perfect game in World Series history. And, you know, I basically related that to him, and it was really a great event.
That is, I mean, that's just unbelievably cool. And, you know, I don't know if I ever realized that you did watch that game live.
Yeah, half of it.
Wow.
Well, in a perfect game, the half is better. The latter half is better than the first half.
That sure is. That's amazing. So that was in the 1956 World Series.
Right.
And you attended a World Series around that time as well. We believe it was 1957.
Right. Now, seeing sporting events now is sort of different. This was a big, big deal. And somebody I would have never thought about even buying tickets to a World Series. And had the fortune that my brother-in-law, who was considerably older than I, was given the tickets, and he didn't want to use them, so he gave me two tickets for me and one of my boyhood friends. We went to the game, and our seats were front row.
That's amazing.
Right field, fair territory, where there was a concrete wall maybe 4 inches thick and maybe 30 inches high.
Yeah.
And you could almost reach out and grab Hank Bauer by the shoulder.
That must have been incredible.
Yeah. The only disappointing thing is the Yankees both, I think, lost that game and lost the series that year.
Mm-hmm. They did. And that series featured a number of great players, not just on the Yankees. Right. Hank Aaron played in that series. Eddie Matthews played in that series. You know, I often think about just what a golden age of baseball it was at the time that you were growing up, between, you know, all those players and having Willie Mays and Duke Snider in New York. And
Roy Campanella.
Roy Campanella was phenomenal. Yeah. Bob Gibson was pitching at that time. I mean, what an incredible group of players you got to watch. And it was also an especially good time to be a Yankee fan, of course.
Right. I'd say if I were to buy a Yankee shirt today, it would be Mantle number 7.
Yeah. And I could see why. So moving forward in the chronology, while you were in college, Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris were on the home run chase and threatening Babe Ruth's record. And I know we were talking a bit about this yesterday, and you said maybe you weren't quite as plugged into the day by day, game by game of it, but you remembered a lot of kind of interesting, compelling discourse from that season, including within our family, that I think it would be cool for you to talk about.
I followed it at the time. I mean, it could be home run by home run. I obviously wanted Mantle to win, but I had no negative feelings about the guys.
Maris, yeah, sure. Right.
And but I remember your grandfather, my great grandfather. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And he obviously was a Babe Ruth fan and thought that when Maris hit his 61 home runs, which broke Babe Ruth's 60 home run record, you know, he didn't consider that he broke the record. And again, you know, back when Babe Ruth did it, the number of games played in a season was less than the number of games now.
Sure, yeah. And then
and I think, I don't remember, Maris, I think didn't hit 61 until very late.
Yeah, it took him till
the season.
Yeah.
And it was after the game count that would have existed in Babe Ruth's era.
Certainly. And I mean, I just think it's amazing. You know, we were talking about this with my dad yesterday, that between his grandfather and, you know, down to me, this is, you know, over 100 years of watching the Yankees that we have in our family. And I just think, you know, what a cool thing that has been passed down. So.
And I still am interested in the Yankees now.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to. I think one thing that would be interesting to trace is, you know, we talked about whether it was 1951 or 1952, the first Yankee game you went to, in which it's not impossible that you saw Joe DiMaggio, but we're not sure. And, you know, Mickey Mantle's whole career and that great dynasty in the 50s and Yogi Berra and Whitey Ford and Don Larsen and all of those great players. And, you know, one thing that my dad talks about is when the Yankees played the Reds in the World Series in, I guess it would have been 1976, and got swept. And he says he remembers asking you before game four of that World Series, is this the last game of the World Series? And you said something like, I hope not. And of course it was.
Yeah.
What, when you think about, you know, you mentioned still being interested in the Yankees today. When you think about your kind of experience going through life as a Yankee fan, are there any memories you have, you know, beyond your childhood and watching those great teams that really stick out to you, that are special to you with the Yankees?
Certainly, I enjoyed the play of Derek Jeter,
who
was a real sportsman and did some phenomenal thing,
certainly, like
falling into the stand to make a catch, and that. So clearly, a lot of people criticize the Yankees because they think it's only money that makes this happen. I just loved rooting for the Yankees.
Yeah. Yeah, and you were a big Jorge Posada fan too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember going to games with you where we saw him.
And Tino Martinez.
Sure, who we saw at spring training that year.
Mariano Rivera.
Yeah, who I ran into at a train station not too long ago. Not unlike your Yogi Berra encounter.
Yeah.
Well, Babo, I've had so much fun doing this.
Well, I did. I hope it turns out well after the editing.
I have no doubt. Is there anything in from your notes that we didn't cover that you were hoping we'd talk about?
I don't
want to miss anything.
Most of it. Oh, one thing. To me, again, we're back to Mickey Mantle.
Yes.
His swing was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look at, I don't know why it is players today. It looks like they're, when they hit home runs, they're hitting it using their arms and their upper body and shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Mickey Mantle wrapped himself, his whole body went around. If you look at down in his legs, he twisted himself. And he obviously was one of the hardest hitters ever in baseball.
Certainly. And probably the greatest.
So the swing was a beautiful thing to see.
Amazing. And probably the greatest switch hitter of all time as well.
Right. Yes. True.
Well, I'm so glad we got to talk about all this. I'm glad that we've documented it because I don't know what those fireworks are, but they seem appropriate.
Uh-huh.
I think this was a ton of fun. I'm so glad that we did this, and I'm excited to watch the Yankees with you here in a little bit.
Thank you for the surprise invitation.
Of course.
Okay.
All right. And we are back. Thank you again to my grandfather, my namesake, another Robert Harris out there, for joining us on the podcast and for regaling us with some of the tales of Yankees teams gone by, and for expanding our favorite segment, Dad Take or Bad Take by a Generation. I'm really happy with it. I hope that people enjoyed it. And as I said, you know, it's not every day that someone who watched Mickey Mantle and has met Yogi Berra is on the podcast. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, we've got Dad Take, Granddad Take, Mother Take. I feel like the expansion potential is just limitless here.
We need a more catchy name on the maternal side. We'll have to workshop that.
I'll call up our guest and see what she thinks.
I feel like she'll have a good idea. All right, Whipple. We're going to rapid fire as we wrap up here. What I want first is the three players you've most enjoyed watching at the beginning of this season. And what I want next is your confidence in this team.
All right. Well, first off, I mean, Juan Soto is clearly number one for me. I think that, you know, there's a down stretch, but it really isn't like about how well he's doing, because he does really well. It's just about watching him as a player. I think on and off the field, the energy he's bringing is just awesome. The way he controls at bats. I mean, we've talked about all this already, but when you're seeing it in like games that matter in front of the home crowd, I've just really enjoyed watching him. And second, another guy's bringing energy, Marcus Stroman. Like, really awesome to watch Marcus Stroman on Friday. I mean, I know the game didn't turn out the way that he wanted, but it was hardly his fault. He pitched incredibly.
Wasn't his fault at all.
He had the shuffle off the mound after the fifth. I mean, just completely in control of a very good lineup in two different games. And I'm just excited to see what he keeps doing and the energy he keeps bringing. And I think like Soto and Stroman are the perfect combination of like high energy guys who are playing well. We've seen high energy guys who don't play well, and I feel like that is just the kiss of death. And to see them doing well, having fun, just been a great start to the season. The third player, I mean, Stanton in the last few games has been fun, but
that's electric.
Yeah, like the most fun at bat, probably Stanton's grand slam on Sunday.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
The sound off the bat there was just really, that's unmatched. But I mean, I'm going to say Volpe. Like, seeing, we've talked about breakout players of the years and, you know, our predictions. And I think the Yankees have been lacking in those candidates. Usually it's young guys starting off hot, like rookie of the year candidates, and then just establishing themselves, or MVP and Cy Young candidates. But we haven't really seen a young player take the leap as a Yankee in quite the way Volpe's doing now. Not to say we know where it's going, but if it's at all in the ballpark of what he's doing, this is a really special player that I think people undervalued last year when there was a lot to like among what there really wasn't to like. But it seems like the changes he made has really stuck. And that's, I think if the Yankees have this kind of Volpe, I mean, that's a 4-5 win shortstop. And, you know, now you're set at the position in a way that I think you weren't really sure about at the beginning of the year. So maybe that's pretty stereotypical. I don't know if like your answers would vary that much, but just
my answers are going to be quite different.
Okay. Well, but then
only for the sake of, partially for the sake of being different.
I think the Soto, Volpe, Stroman trio is just bringing good energy and good baseball to the Yankees right now. And then for confidence, what did I say last week? Did I say 9.5?
You were either at 9 or 9.5.
I'm going to say 9.5. I'm going to if I was there, I'll stay there. There's the again, as I said in the beginning, the questions I have about the team, I feel like can be answered by the players they have. And Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, you know, emergent Anthony Volpe, a resurgent Giancarlo Stanton. Like, these aren't just good players. These are really high impact players. And it doesn't take, you know, it doesn't take all of them to get the Yankees to where they want to go. But even if a few of them are playing at this level for the rest of the year, it's just a lot to be excited about. And lastly, I mean, the energy and just kind of the way they've really steamrolled good competition this year, the poise that they've had, it seems like they're on a mission. And that's, I mean, it's everyone's kind of favorite kind of baseball team, the team looking to get revenge for subpar play last year. And for one moment this year, they have not looked like they've been faltering from that mission.
I love it. So on my end, you know, I'm very much a process over results guy. Like, you know, one of the hitters I'm most bullish on over the rest of the season is Austin Wells, just because all he's done is come out and destroy the ball, even though he has nothing to show for it. But when I'm watching a team play and I'm just like having fun, it's obviously results oriented. So I'm going to pick some results guys. And one guy who is big results over process in the early going here has been Oswaldo Cabrera. His ex-WOBA starts with a 2, but he has a 177 WRC plus. He's, you know, been buoyed by a 391 BABIP and some great home run per fly ball luck in a couple of cases, but that's why you should pull the ball in the air. Oswaldo Cabrera is a great case study in that. You know, people talked about Cody Bellinger outperforming his expected stats that way. That's exactly what Oswaldo Cabrera should be doing. Last year, he was a lot of contact, a lot of ball on the ground. This year, he's changed that up. He's gotten results. And I just think Oswaldo Cabrera, like he's so much fun. His energy is infectious. I love his enthusiasm. And he's so easy to root for. He's the kind of guy who I want to see succeed. And for him to have gotten the kinds of results he's gotten to this point has just been really nice. You know, I don't know how long this Linsanity run for him is going to last or what level of performance he'll settle in at, but it's just been so nice to see him perform this way in the early running. And he was a really fun, unexpected hero to have in the first week of the season. So shout out to Oswaldo Cabrera. Next on the list, I got to go with my man, Nick Birdie. Nick Birdie has a 0 ERA. He's shown us that part of the Nick Birdie experience is that he's not going to throw strikes, but I'm okay with it because he's electric. Like he comes out, he's pumping 98, 99, 100. He's throwing crazy breaking balls. Nick Birdie's a ton of fun to watch. And as Matt Blake continues to tinker with him throughout the year, I think that's going to be really, really exciting. So Nick Birdie, shout out to you. And then I'm torn on who my last guy should be between Big Ferg, Caleb Ferguson, who has come in and got some really important outs for this Yankees team to this point in the year, and Luis Gil, who I think I'm going to have to give this to. I don't care about the walks. I don't care that he's been BABIP lucky. I don't care that he's running a 0% home run per fly ball rate. Luis Gil has struck out 14 batters in 9 innings, and that's insane. And when he has those innings in which he's on, he looks absolutely untouchable. So Luis Gil, absolutely electric to watch. Again, you know, there's stuff going on in the, you know, the underlying numbers there that you just don't know what's going to happen, but his ability to miss bats and make really good hitters look foolish has been so entertaining.
He went toe to toe with Angel Hernandez, and
he did.
Shout out to him for that. Like, that was
honestly
for a young player to basically get like part of the Angel Hernandez show. That's a lot, and he did well. Yeah. Came back from it.
Angel Hernandez needs to lose his job. Anyway, with that, we get to confidence. I think I'm still at 8.5. There's still a lot of like BABIP stuff going on. There's still a lot of guys who should be striking out a lot of batters, not striking out many batters going on. There's still, you know, some ERA estimators not lining up with ERA. There's still some quality of contact that I want to see that hasn't shown up yet. And I got to leave room for when Aaron Judge remembers that he's the best player in the sport. So I'll be at 8.5. Whipple, as we get out of here to finish up our days before the University of Connecticut Huskies take on Purdue in the national championship. Go Huskies, by the way. Do you have any parting shots?
Go Huskies. And I will be taking a field trip to Norfolk, Virginia this weekend to see the world beater AAA Norfolk Tides play the Scranton Railriders.
Give Everson Pereira my best, please.
I don't really care what happens, but the one thing I want to happen is to see Everson Pereira hit that mystical object, that magical moment. You know, I just want to see the world famous home run. And if that happens, I will go home happy.
I think that witnessing Everson Pereira hitting the world famous home run might be better than winning the World Series.
I will report back immediately if it happens, and we'll just, you know, we'll call it a season.
Please do. Please do. All right, Whipple, that wraps it up for this episode of the Yankees Files podcast. People can find everything we do at yankeesfiles.com. They can follow us on Twitter, where we're at Yankees Files. Our podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we hope that you'll rate, review, and subscribe if you enjoy the podcast. We hope you'll only subscribe, download, and juice our listen numbers if you don't like the podcast. We don't need your negative reviews. Podcast is available with video on Spotify, and the entire video podcast also goes up on our YouTube channel where we are at Yankees Files. We'll be back same time, same place next week to recap the week that was for what are hopefully still at that point the major league leading New York Yankees. And until then, let's go Huskies and let's go Yankees.